All right, thank you for the introduction. Good morning, everyone. I'm Sarah Del Moro, and I'm going to present some research from my Master of Science thesis in soil science on ammonia volatilization from fertigation practices. So I'll start with a question for all of you, just in memory of Don, kind of. What do you get when you divide the circumference of a pumpkin by its diameter? Does anybody know? You get pumpkin pie. It's a two-dimensional pumpkin. Anyway, that's sort of Don's thing. You always start, you know, talk with a joke. But just for those of you who didn't know, Don was a great asset to the agronomy community and served very tirelessly all of his community members, his students, myself, Sarah Light, who's over there in the audience, and many other people from his community to the further reaches of even the world. And this picture here is actually taken of him about a year ago, picking out an average-sized pumpkin from our Hermiston Station pumpkin patch. Also very typical of Don. He likes to do everything big. So I'll get started here on ammonia volatilization. Why do we care about ammonia? This is a picture here of the Columbia River Gorge, where I live and where the research took place. And on the left side, you see kind of a clearer picture, and then on the right side, there's a haze here. It's actually caused as a downstream reaction of ammonia volatilization. It can react with, ammonia in the air can react with sulfur and nitrogen oxides and create aerosol particles that cause this haze. They're also detrimental to your health, your mucous membranes in your lungs, and especially if you're asthmatic, it's very problematic. Also, what comes up must come down, so ammonia in the atmosphere has to get deposited in some place eventually. Usually it's not in a place that was intended, usually a forest ecosystem or some nitrogen-sensitive area where it doesn't belong. And then last, nitrogen loss is expensive, especially for growers who want it to be there for their crops and not in the air causing a haze. Here are the reactions, basically, of ammonia volatilization. The first one is urea hydrolysis, and this is the reaction that sort of increases soil pH, drives the availability of plant-available nitrogen or ammonium. The second reaction there is actually volatilization itself, and a higher soil pH will drive this reaction to the right, creating more ammonia gas. So when your soil pH is usually above 7.5-8, you're going to have a little more ammonia volatilization occurring. So I'm going to start with some previous research that led us to the mini pivots. On this journey, it started with Holcomb et al. In 2011. This is the grad student who preceded me, and he did a lot of field research and studies on dry urea products and ammonia volatilization from them. In one particular study, he investigated the effect of different irrigation rates following dry urea application in the field. It was really interesting. It took place, though, in late fall after the crop was harvested because he had to, you know, kind of accommodate the grower. And so basically he applied dry urea on the ground and then applied different irrigation rates to that same application to see which ones would limit ammonia volatilization. However, this was, because it was in late fall and after harvest, not very representative of what growers actually do, who fertilizes, you know, after they've harvested, that much. So normally in the Columbia Basin region, most growers will fertilize all of their crops throughout the season along with their irrigation, especially potato and corn growers. Jess used the modified passive flux method, which I've also used in all of my field experiments, to measure ammonia from the treatment plots, which are a circular plot that are 30 meters in diameter. This is a picture of that method here. It consists of a pole that's 3 meters high with a wind vane attached to the top of it to rotate into the direction of oncoming wind. It is passive, meaning that there's no power input required, and it also has no influence on the environment like a chamber would. It's measuring a direct flux loss from the plot, or a pounds per acre lost, if you will. The tubes here that collect ammonia are placed in 5 different heights on the pole, and the inside of them are coated with an oxalic acid to trap ammonia and turn it into ammonium, which can be rinsed in, from the tube and analyzed in the lab. This is an overview of Jess's study. He used a center pivot irrigated circle that was approximately 56 hectares in area, And these little pie slices here represent different irrigation rates that are applied to his treatment plots. If you can see this T pointing to arrows to the small circles, this is where he applied the dry urea fertilizer. And each plot contains one of the center mass systems inside of it to monitor ammonia volatilization. And here are his results. This is a graph representing irrigation rate on the x-axis, and then ammonia loss as a percent of what was applied on the y-axis. I'm guessing he applied probably 168 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. Without any irrigation, there's a surprisingly large amount of ammonia loss, 80%. And what he really found was that about 12 millimeters of irrigation here is really sufficient to incorporate fertilizer into the ground and reduce ammonia loss. So that leads us to our current research and why we wanted to look at fertigation at all. A lot of growers are telling us, well, this is great, but it's not really representative of what we actually do in the field. We don't apply, you know, dry urea and always, of course, irrigate with various irrigation rates. What most growers in the Columbia Basin do is they inject their fertilizer into their current irrigation system, which is the definition of fertigation. It's very efficient. It saves them a lot of time, a lot of labor and fuel, and also often inputs because it's getting a little closer to the ideal theory of fertilizing or applying just what the crop needs and only when it needs it. However, it's really hard to do ammonia volatilization studies on large 50-hectare or more areas of land. It's logistically difficult because you can't get temporal and spatial replications, and it's also very costly to apply that much treatment to a field and measure it. So the obvious solution would be to make mini pivots, right? These are actually a thing. They're installed at the Hermiston Ag Research and Extension Center, and very adorable. They're installed in three different pairs on the station, so two right next to each other so that we could get a replicated study out of two, or comparison in two, and then replicate them three times in different locations on our station. They're 18 and a half meters long, and they irrigate a whole tenth of a hectare or a quarter acre, and they also complete one full revolution and 1 hour at full speed, which is another nice thing because the big pivots, those take at least 8 hours to get around. You can't even start measuring ammonia loss for 8 hours or, you know, however long it takes. So we had all kinds of things we could do with these mini pivots, and we just had to pick some things to try. So these are pretty preliminary results, but our first study was very exploratory. We just wanted to see how much ammonia is volatilizing anyway. Is it even a problem, and should we worry about it? Then the next question was, how much water is really ideal to limit ammonia volatilization the most in a fertigated system? And then the third question is, we wanted to try products, so we started with urease inhibitor, NBPT, which stands for N-butyl thiophosphoric triamide, and it inhibits the urease enzyme that proceeds with urea hydrolysis. We use Agritane. So our methods of measurement did include the center mass flux method still, which is what we've always used and what the grad student before me used. It was a little different. We had to kind of install it off-center in these plots because the pivot irrigation system was installed in the center of the plot. But we wanted to try it. We added a couple more methods to make sure that this method was going to give us results we wanted. Because it's so novel, we wanted to make sure we were confident in our results and we knew what we were seeing. So we installed a very similar flux method that was developed more or less by the same people. Periphery flux, which is the same 3-meter tubes with the same 3-meter poles with tubes installed, but there's no mast, there's no wind rotation. It's actually installed in four locations around the plot in the cardinal directions, northeast, south, and west. And the only problem is there are 16 times more tubes to analyze for each data point than the center mass method, so that part is a little less practical when you get into the analysis. The third method is a completely different method. It's a UV spectrum open path gas detector, and it was installed about a meter downwind of one of our plots to monitor ammonia volatilization from that. It requires wind data as well. It can be a little expensive to get those kinds of instruments. And it gives real-time results, so you can get results every 10 seconds if you want on how much ammonia is being measured. And there's no lab analysis with this. It can be a direct flux measurement. But it will require having the data put into a model to get an inverse dispersion calculation done for an actual flux. So I'll get into the first experiment now. The way we organized this was we just used two different fertilizer treatments. Our control was, of course, no fertilizer. And our actual treatment was solution 32, or UAN32, which is urea ammonium nitrate that has a 32% nitrogen content. We injected this into the pivot with an irrigation rate of 12.7 millimeters. And this is one we chose because it's very common grower practice to use this irrigation rate and this fertilizer rate as well, 67 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. We wanted to make it as realistic as possible at first just to see what's going on with the current practices. And all of this was applied to a sorghum crop that had recently been mowed, and we were able to replicate this study three times. So I'll get into the results now. Here's the graph of the general fertigation. On the x-axis, we've got hours after application, and then on the y-axis, we've got a percent of N applied. That was a percent of nitrogen loss as ammonium. And the control line is the black line here down at the bottom. The fertilized line is the orange. And you can see that there was some ambient ammonia volatilization happening, at least, 1 or 2%, 3%, because the control shouldn't actually have had any ammonia happening. But it does show us that there is something going on with ammonia volatilization because the lines are definitely different. We're seeing the typical ammonia volatilization slope happening in our fertilized plot. And there's still a lot more data analysis to happen with these as well, so I'll remind that we're still analyzing quite a bit of data for these. The next study was the variable irrigation rate study. We used four different irrigation rates for this of 0 millimeters, 5, 12.7, and 20.3 millimeters, corresponds to 0, 0.2, 0.5, and 0.8 inches of irrigation. And we used the same fertilizer rate in all of these, 67 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, solution 32, and it was also applied to a mowed sorghum under the plot. We wanted to measure the ammonia volatilization from these, and we also had background measurements taken to take into account ambient ammonia concentrations in the air. And we replicated all of these twice. So the data is still a little rough, but we have the same hours after application on the x-axis, and then a cumulative ammonia N loss as a percent of what was applied on the y-axis, and it goes up to 1.4% here. We saw, actually, with our lowest irrigation rate of 0 millimeters, that it was actually not the highest rate, and that's because urea hydrolysis does require a little bit of moisture to really get going. And when you give it a little bit of moisture, the 5 millimeters irrigation rate, you can see that's where our highest rate is observed. And grower practice of 12.7 to 20.3 millimeters is really not bad. It's an ideal irrigation rate, just as suspected, for limiting ammonia loss. And then here's the results of our MVPT treatment, Agritain versus no Agritain. It was Agritain Ultra with a constant fertilizer rate, and we applied this treatment to plowed soil with sorghum residue this time. And there were two applications of this data. Same graph, hours after application and percent ammonia N loss. The orange line here is the Agritain treatment, and the black line is just solution 32 with no Agritain. So you can see there is a reduction of loss, or reduction of ammonia loss compared to the control treatment. And there's still quite a bit of data to analyze, especially on this study. You see that the y-axis has changed. And I'm probably attributing that to the fact of the field being recently plowed with a whole lot of sorghum organic matter in there and causing pH to go up and soil microbes to increase activity and all of that stuff. So in summary, we don't see a lot of ammonia loss in fertigation situations compared to dry fertilizer situations, but it can still be economically significant. So if we can reduce it by simply upping an irrigation rate, then that would be an ideal situation. There, 12.7 millimeters is sufficient to limit ammonia N loss in these systems. And there is a possible benefit as well to using a urease inhibitor. So results are preliminary. There's more work to do, and that'll end up happening in times to follow. So thank you, and I'll entertain any questions.
Okay. Later on.
All right. Sounds good.
Next speaker. Well, it looks like our next speaker is not here. So, if you have any questions, please come to the microphone. Sarah, please, there is a question.
In your last experiment, actually, where you compared the ammonia inhibitors,
yeah,
and with the control. So the crop was actually sorghum, right?
Yes, the previous crop was sorghum.
So in one study that is conducted by one group of scientists in Japan, so they actually observed and analyzed in sorghum, there is one biological nitrification inhibitor. They named it sorghonion. So they also stress the nitrification inhibition. So that maybe if you add the one in your next study, if you add the another treatment, so that may be the effect of the sorghum. So that inhibits too much.
That's very interesting. I haven't read that, but I'll definitely look at it now.
So that's the paper actually
from Japan. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.